And welcome to Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live here on Giants.com. He's Paul Dottino. I'm Lance Meadow with you for the next 60 minutes, 201-939-4513. That is the telephone number. You could also interact with us on Twitter using hashtag Giants Chat. So we're going to focus on a number of different topics today. OTA starts Monday. Up on Giants.com, they have the 10 players to watch during OTAs. Paul and I will give you our thoughts on those 10 as well as some others to keep close tabs on. And with news that LeGarrette Blount joined the Philadelphia Eagles earlier this week, we'll look at the entire NFC East, the running back depth charts, and the team's strengths, where they may want to continue to bolster their backfields as they get closer to training camp. And let's start with OTAs, Paul. I know you are amped up, you are excited, especially with the Nike run this morning that you made known on social media. But they're finally going to get on the field, the rookies and the veterans. It's one thing to see the guys at rookie minicamp. It's another thing now to see everybody on the field at once.
Well, and that's the difference. I want to make it clear to everybody out there. When you have OTAs, even though there's no contact, okay, you are now allowed to at least have the offense and the defense on the practice field at the same time. Now, are they doing walkthroughs? Yeah, that's all it is. It's just walkthroughs. But at least they're allowed to be on the field at the same time. And we see bodies out there on the field. And it's a full field. And it's a full team. And that's exciting on itself. But, you know, the thing about it is, this is where the guys go through their mental reps. Because now they actually, instead of lining up against air, they have guys opposite them. And as they go through their mental reps with the playbook, especially guys who may not know anything about the playbook because they're either rookies or they're newcomers, you know, from the list of veterans who are here, this is their opportunity to start saying, okay, now, what do I do when I get out there? And I got somebody, okay, yeah, and I got to go there, and I go there, and I go three steps. They can start getting a feel for what the playbook is like.
And that's important. It's also, I think, interesting to watch the rookies who are vocal during rookie minicamp, who were assertive.
Sure.
Does that carry over now that they're in the mix with the veterans? The 10 players that our website put together to watch during the course of OTAs. Here's the 10. You have Evan Engram, the first-round pick. They also threw out safety Darian Thompson, who was limited to just two games during his rookie season last year. Adam Biznavati, the team's sixth-round pick from this year. So that is another player to see where he lines up. Speaking of the draft, defensive end Avery Moss, he also made the list. You have Eli Apple trying to build off an impressive rookie season. DJ Fluker, one of the additions in free agency on the offensive line. Paul Perkins, who is in line to be the starting running back. Brandon Marshall, who was also added in free agency. Davis Webb, their third round pick. And then the kicker, Aldrick Rosas. So an interesting list. What I would add to that list, Paul, is in addition to Darian Thompson, because I think watching players who were sidelined last season due to injury, how much do they take part in OTAs? I think that's always important to watch. So in addition to Thompson, I'd throw Shane Vereen out there. That's another guy that I would watch. And also Matt Lacoste, who's been sidelined the last two seasons. He's battling for a tight end
with
spot.
With leg injuries in particular.
Correct.
You want to see him moving around fluidly.
And then the fourth guy is JT Thomas, the linebacker who suffered a torn ACL in week one last season and wound up missing the entire year. Those guys, I think, are extremely important.
Well, I would agree, and quite frankly, I'm also going to be very interested to see what Tomlinson does, because I remember when Jonathan Hankins first got to the Giants, and the thing that impressed me about him was how quick and how fluid he moved for a man of his size. And so that's something that you can see right away, even though, again, it's only walkthrough and so forth. What you can see sometimes is just how well the guy moves. Some people, especially linemen, can be, I don't know, is clawed-like a word?
Well, we'll add it to your vocabulary,
okay.
I guess.
That can happen. But, you know, with a guy of Tomlinson's size at over 300 pounds, you'd like him to show some dexterity, even in these minor minuscule kinds of drills that they're doing. You still want to see, how's the guy move? How's he carry himself? And, you know, that's going to be an important thing for the Giants, because if they really want him to replace Hankins, he's going to have to show the kind of athleticism that Hankins showed.
In terms of stopping the run, pushing the pocket, those are two facets that you want to watch with respect to Tomlinson, the Giants' second-round pick. Now, on the offensive line, I think it's similar. You want to see how guys move, Paul, but you also want to see where they line up, especially on the right side of the line. This is going to be our first opportunity to say, hey, this is maybe how the Giants envision using DJ Fluker. this is how the Giants envision using Bobby Hart and so forth, because we've talked about all these players coming into the mix, and there is going to be competition, but we don't know exactly where the Giants think that these players are going to line up and complement one another.
Well, McAdoo has already said he's going to start out with Fluker at right guard. That's where he's going to start him at. But I do believe, as I've said all along, it's going to be a three-way competition for two spots. And I think what you will see is those guys are going to constantly, whether it's Hart and Fluker, who are going to rotate between the two spots, and Jerry, who's just going to be in and out at right guard. I think that's what we're going to see. And I think that's going to continue all the way into the preseason. I would be shocked if the Giants determine exactly how that's going to line up before those preseason games are played.
201-939-4513 is the telephone number, hashtag Giants Chat. We're going to get to some of your phone calls a little bit later on. We'll also look at the NFC East running back depth charts to get an idea of what this division looks like. And we want to hear from you, players to watch during OTAs. We threw out some players that were hurt last season. We threw out in terms of how the offensive linemen are going to line up. What are some other names, perhaps, that you are going to be watching closely starting next week? Let's open up the lines. David is in Connecticut. He gets us going on Friday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live. What's happening, Dave?
Hey, guys. Great. I'm David. It's really great to hear you guys. I've been calling in. I'm really excited, if you can't tell already.
Well, absolutely. Glad to have you aboard. So cool. What do you have for us?
Listen, I'm calling because I want to talk about toughness, especially on the offensive line. The running game, to me, is where it all starts. You know, it's about controlling the inches and controlling the time. And we lost in the playoffs by not having a great run game. So I'm just so concerned with that. That's my main concern. And I think even getting Brandon Marshall and having the great wide receivers that we have, interesting, opens up the run game. But I feel like the toughness has to be there on every single play. Because if we control the clock, if we control the inches, we open up, we spread the offense, the defense isn't out there as long, and that's where it all starts.
Time of possession, David, and appreciate the phone call. I think that the running game, if you can have it move consistently, you're going to be able to milk the clock, you're going to rest your defense, as you mentioned, you know, and you're going to be able to put together long, sustainable drives. However, you know, long, sustainable drives are great, but it's more important that you actually turn that into points and not just milk the clock. This is what I will say about, Paul, what I think the wide receivers and maybe a guy like Evan Engram can do for the running game without breaking down the offensive line. Last season, one of the things we talked about, Paul, is the fact that very little was done in terms of giving the defense a reason to bring guys closer to the box. And that's why I think they were able to roll the safeties over to Odell Beckham and double-team him. Now if you have Brandon Marshall, you have Evan Engram in the middle of the field, now maybe you're forcing defenses to get away from Beckham a little bit more, focus on the other entities of the pass game, and then maybe that hopefully will open up a little bit more room to get that running game going.
Well, let's make something clear. Engram, who is probably going to be running down the deep middle of the field, will take a safety with him. So, you know, if you're planning on going two deep zone, he's supposed to be the two deep zone breaker, okay? At the same time, he also makes it more dangerous because now if somebody tries to double team one of those outside guys, that leaves one safety. Well, if that safety's got to cover Engram, that means there's no safeties in the box, which is really what you're trying to say.
Yeah. So, because the other guy you figure is going to also go over to help maybe Odell Beckham as well. Yeah.
Right. So that's part of what the Giants can do to help their run game out. Then, obviously, you have to consider signing Red Ellison. The guy's 260 pounds of steel. And, you know, he's going to be able to get a hat on some people as they try to open up holes. But here's what I will say to you. I've said this many, many, many times as I've discussed the power running game, but I want to simplify it for you if you folks still don't understand. If you've got about 3 minutes left in a game, 2.5 minutes left or whatever it is, and you've got a four-point lead and you're trying to hold the clock, who are you going to give the ball to seven straight times to move the chains twice and get two first downs so that you can either drain the entire clock or you can force the other team to burn all of their timeouts? That's what you need. That's the missing component on this Giants offense right now. You don't have that guy. Now, years ago, they could do it with Tiki Barber because the line was that good. And Jim Finn was that good of a blocker for Tiki Barber. And so they were able to do that with Tiki, who ran hard and wasn't your typical thumper back, okay? But what you have to do, okay, if you can say, I'm going to hand the ball off seven straight times to this guy behind me, everybody in the stadium knows he's getting it, and he's going to go three, four, three, three, four, three. Get those two first downs on seven straight runs. That's what you need to do to kill the clock or to force that other team to burn all their timeouts. That's how you win ball games. Because otherwise, you're giving the ball back, okay? And I don't want to hear about how, oh, we could use the pass to kill the clock. Great. Great. You know how many things go wrong when you pass the ball in that situation? So that's what you need to do to kill the clock. Now, people on Twitter hitting me up and saying, well, you know, Gallman runs strong. Okay.
Well, there's certainly potential for that, but we haven't seen it yet.
I understand, but he still doesn't have the frame. What you're talking about is asking a Volkswagen to run people down like a Mack truck. And a Mack truck is a lot more powerful and a lot more forceful than a Volkswagen is. Even if you gun the Volkswagen, you can floor that gas pedal, Lance, and guess what? It's not going to have the same impact as a Mack truck. It just won't. So that is why I'm so strong in terms of getting a thumper on this Giants roster. Having said all of that, is it impossible to get it done? No. Once again, Jim Finn and a very good offensive line allow Tiki to milk the clock in the four-minute offense. So it is possible. It's just a lot harder to do. And you need more components around that running back if you're going to be able to pull it off without the thumper.
Well, that's where I think a player like Rhett Ellison can help immensely, where maybe you don't have, like you said, that Mack truck, but you have a fullback that could lead the way. And the reason why I bring that up is, and I use this as an example more often than not, when Brett Jones came in as the fullback in week one last season in Dallas against the Cowboys, and I'm bringing up the play-by-play just to spell it out here. The Giants took over. They were up by one, Paul. There was 3:57 left in the contest. So they took over at their own 23. So here's your example of how they solely used Rashad Jennings. They weren't mixing and matching. Jennings was the guy. They fed him the football, but Brett Jones was in on a lot of those plays as the fullback. So first down, Jennings up the middle 7 yards. Then he runs off left tackle for 12, okay? So just like that, they get the first down. Dallas uses its first timeout. 3:05 left. Now it's at the Giants 42. Jennings runs left tackle for three. Dallas uses its second timeout. Exactly 3 minutes left. Jennings runs left guard for nine. Okay, there's another first down. Dallas is forced to use its third timeout. All three timeouts are utilized. There's 2:54 left in the game. Giants now have a first down at the Dallas 46. They're in Cowboys territory. Jennings, left guard for 1 yard. Jennings up the middle. He lost three. So it's a third and 12. There's 2 minutes left, so we're at the two-minute warning. Jennings up the middle for 11. It's fourth and one, and they ultimately decide to punt as opposed to go for it with about a minute 12 left in the game. But I ran it through you. Jennings picked up two first downs, and they specifically fed him the football.
On seven straight carries, and Dallas burned all their timeouts. And had they been able to save just one of them, do you remember when Dallas got the ball back and then moved the ball to the Giants' side of the 50?
They could have used that extra timeout.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Terrence Williams couldn't get off the field.
Oh, wow. Yeah. There's logic in what I say. Not everybody wants to believe that, but there is.
There's a few of us that believe. A few. We'll leave it at that. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat. Let's head back to the phone lines. Mark is in Chicago. Mark, what's happening?
Hey, boys. How you doing today?
Hi. Doing well, Mark. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, you sort of talked a lot about one of the first things I wanted to talk about. I was very disappointed that we didn't make a bigger push for Blount. And I think in the discussion that you've had here, I think you illustrated exactly why we need a fullback slash power running game. I guess one of the points I was going to make was that, you know, if you have somebody like that, you use them probably eight or nine plays in a game. And if you think about it, those are the most important plays of the game. You have your second and ones, your third and ones, your drive extenders, your goal line, where you can thump the ball across. And I just think that we made a, or whoever it was, made a very bad strategic mistake last year in not bringing in a fullback or a power runner to help us. And I think it proved itself all throughout the season. And I was just thinking back to a couple of Super Bowls with Kyle Shanahan and Pete Carroll. I think when they review those Super Bowl tapes, they're saying, I wish I had given the ball off to my power runner there in a couple of situations down at the goal line and to extend some drives. So I guess getting back to your initial discussion at the beginning of the show, I don't know if you can figure out in OTAs, but can you sort of figure out in looking at practices how we might align our power running game, our goal line offense, things like that, and see maybe what our strategy is there?
Not really. And to be honest with you, you know, at least the Giants did bring in Red Ellison, who can be a fullback in those spots. Maybe he plays tight end the rest of the game, but then in the four-minute offense, they decide he's going to be a fullback, and he helps block the way for what we're talking about. Again, it can be done. There's more than one way to skin a cat. It can be done. I would have preferred just having a thumper to do it. You talk about another guy, Shane Smith, the San Jose State rookie running back who's been brought in at 6'2", 247. Now, that's a beefy guy. By the way, hardly touched the ball in college. So he's a pure blocking fullback. But now, what if I said maybe the Giants put him in the backfield? Let's say he makes the team. What if you put him in the backfield with Ellison? And now, all of a sudden, you got Ellison on the edge playing tight end. Ingram, you know what? It's the four-minute offense. We don't need you right now to run any pass routes. Put Ellison on the edge next to one of the tackles, and now put Smith in the backfield. So now you got two, in effect, fullbacks to help out the O-line to block.
Complementary linemen. Also, you make the defense think maybe Ellison runs out as a receiver or something
like that.
I mean,
there are things you could do, you know, you got to be a little creative.
I was going to say, I'll also throw out, you know, we forget because he's been hurt, and we talked about this off the top of the show, Paul. Matt Lacoste, if you go back to his days at Illinois,
yes,
he was also used
correct
as an H-back, as a fullback. You can actually use him on the field with Red Ellison
it's
as well.
It's hard for me to count on him after 2 years of injuries.
Completely,
and you know,
understand.
I'm a huge Matt Lacoste fan, but I need to see him stay on the field before I can even discuss him.
Well, the point is, though, to me, we're back to square one. It's OTAs. This is the time you experiment. That's why I'm throwing his name out there. I agree with you. He's got to prove he's durable. There's no doubt about that. But this is the time of the year where you could go back to the well and say, hey, maybe we can look to see if we can line this guy up in this spot, considering
and then, of course,
what he did at college.
The other thing you can do, and obviously they decided after the first game not to use Brett Jones in a jumbo package. Now, if you go jumbo package and the loser of the right side, whether it's Fluker or Bobby Hart, they could also wind up coming in a jumbo package. And now you pound away, you know, in the four-minute offense with one of those extra linemen out there, because maybe you feel as though those guys are more competent to handle that situation. So, you know, again, there are other ways to do it, but it would have just been easier to have the power back.
Yeah, I think you bring up some good alternatives. I think McAdoo tried to do that last year because a few times he put even Will Tye and Larry Donnell in the backfield.
That's, they're not suited to do that. They're just not.
But I would say that this year, I think a guy like Red Ellison, if you bring him from out of the backfield, Mark, I think he's much more suitable to do something that they asked Will Tye to do last season.
Yeah, and I don't think you can discount Shane Vereen down by the goal line because I think I was at the Washington game last year. He scored a running touchdown very easily against the Redskins. So he has that versatility that he could run or catch a pass. So I wouldn't discount that as well at the goal line.
And he's caught passes out of the backfield near the goal line too. So
see,
they've utilized it both ways.
You know what the big problem with all of this is? In those kinds of situations, the way the Giants roster is configured right now, they've got to get a hat on a hat and get the block and create the crease for the running back to do what he's got to do. You're relying on the blocking to be adequate and effective. If you have a thumper, he doesn't have to have that crease. Again, fourth and one, fourth and about a foot, Patriots game, Arizona, Super Bowl, Brandon Jacobs behind right guard, and what does he do? He forces his way through the pile. Richie Seibert trips him. He trips over Seibert's feet, but forces his way through the pile. And by one arm, boom, first down Giants. You know what? A 215-pound running back is not getting that first down. Game over. Patriots ball. You know what I'm saying?
Yep. Well, I have one comment on that, one more comment or a statement. Now I want to have a Ring of Honor question. I say we bring back Maurice Carthon.
I tell you what, he's a lot bigger these days than he was then.
All right. Hey, last fall I was reading an article about Spider Lockhart, and the writer thought that Spider Lockhart deserved to be in the Ring of Honor. Paul, I wanted you to go back and sort of comment on this. He was a great ball player that played during the dark ages of Giants football. And there are very few players that are on the Ring of Honor that did that. Joe Morrison is one. Dick Lynch is another. Pete Gogolak.
Well, Dick played on some good teams in the early 60s, too.
The championship seasons.
Yeah, don't put Dick in that era, because Dick played in the early 60s, too, when those teams went to championship games. So he doesn't qualify as a guy who missed out on all the glory.
Right, but he did play on the 1966 team, which went 112-1.
Yeah.
They were the worst defense in NFL history. They got 501 points in 14 games, which was a record until a couple of years ago. They gave up 250 points over a five-game period, including scoring 41 points, but they lost by 31. So if you think 2015 was a bad year, man, you should have been alive back then.
I try to tell these young folks that all the time, and they don't want to listen to me. I've seen bad. Trust me.
Yeah. So, you know, I want to get your comment on that. He made the Pro Bowl in 1966 when they had that team.
Well, that team,
Pro Bowl another year. The other thing, Paul, that he did, and I don't know if you remember this, but he would catch punts like an outfielder, two-handed over his head, never fumbled the ball, and he never fought fair caught. It was amazing. So I think it's worth consideration. He's number three in interceptions. He's ahead of Dick Lynch. I don't think he'll ever do it because, one, he's passed away. He doesn't have anybody to, you know, sort of, you know, put a campaign together for him. But I think that guy's as deserving as anybody else. Not as anybody else, but certainly more deserving than others that are in the Ring of Honor. And I'll listen to your comments off the air. Thanks.
All right, Mark. Sure, thanks for the call.
The Giants had two really good guys in that secondary in those days. Willie Williams was another outstanding member of the DBs, and he was a ball hawk and a thief. He was a corner, and Spider was the free safety. Now, the reason they called him Spider Lockhart, by the way, his name was Carl Lockhart, you probably know, is that he had a very small frame and he was very wiry, so they said he looked like a spider, okay? The thing about it was, not only did he intercept passes, but he was a very smart player, and he hit like a truck. This is one of those guys who played a lot bigger than his frame, was never afraid of anybody, and would always stick his head in there and his heart out there for the team. A great, great Giant, to the point where, as you may recall, in the Super Bowl against the Broncos that year in 86, you know, the Giants had the spider patch when he passed away from cancer prematurely. And it was George Martin, I believe, actually, who may have gone to Giants management and said, you know, what can we do to honor Spider? You know, all those years that he played on the suffering team, and now we got a chance to do something special. I think it might have been George Martin who came up with the initial idea. I want to give him credit for it. I'm not sure if that's 100% accurate. And they came up with the Spider. The patch that they put on their jerseys that year, and anything you see with the Giants Super Bowl that season, you always see the spider and the 43. That's what that signifies. And I'm with you, quite frankly. I don't make that call. I don't get a vote, but I certainly would. My heart would warm over if Spider Lockhart was put up in the Giants Ring of Honor. And he never played for anybody else. He was a lifetime Giant. Better part of a decade.
11 seasons. Yeah, he had 41 interceptions in those.
And
11 seasons.
And as the caller said, I believe two Pro Bowls, and you know.
And he also was a kick returner, punt returner
yes.
as well.
Yeah. He gave everything he had, and I never had the chance to meet him or talk to him, but from those who did and were on his teams, who I've gotten to know, they all tell me what a great teammate he was. So I'm with you. I may ask somebody about it at some point during the course of the summer and just see what the response is. But I think he's worthy.
Let's head back to the phone lines. We got Ty in Maryland. Ty, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys?
Doing well, Ty. What do you got for us?
Hey. Okay, so the person who I got two guys. The two guys who I'm looking at in OTAs right now is Orleans Darkwa and Travis Rudolph. I want to get you guys' outlook on the two of those guys in OTAs right now.
Well, Darkwa to me is the closest to being that thumper slash power back that Paul was talking about earlier in the program. So, I mean, he's certainly somebody that I think can assume that role. Darkwa's had some injury issues, so he also needs to prove that he's durable. But, you know, I remember that Cowboys game not too long ago when they were going back and forth with running backs. This was the 2015 season when Darkwa ran up the gut and scored a touchdown. Yeah, I mean, he's got the skill set that I think would fit that role. But, you know, once again, you're only going to tell so much in OTAs. As far as Rudolph is concerned, he flashed a little bit of rookie minicamp, made a few nice grabs from Davis Webb. Now it'll be nice to see him in with the other wide receivers. I would make the argument wide receiver to me is one of the deepest positions on this team entering OTAs, mini camp, and there's going to be some fierce competition once you get beyond the top four. That's assuming if you're including Dwayne Harris in that top four. You know, then we get to the Roger Lewis's, the Tavares Kings from last season, and then, you know, Travis Rudolph, Kevin Snead is another guy who they just signed. You know, there's going to be a lot of guys that are going to have an opportunity to battle one another, and he's one of them.
And then there's Darius Powell, left over
from last
year,
season,
who flashed enough to make the practice squad, and, you know, he's going to have to take a step forward now if he's going to be involved in that competition.
Yeah, I really like all of those wide receivers, to be honest with you. I've been looking at them on NFL Network when they've been doing the updates on the Giants minicamp and everything. And I agree. This is what you guys were talking about a few days ago. I really believe that this is the best wide receiver core on paper that Eli has ever played with. And to be honest with you, this has all of the makings right now of an MVP season for Eli. I know he's coming up on age and – you know, I guess what people are saying that he's downclining or whatever, I really don't believe that. But at his age, I really believe that this has the makings to be an MVP campaign for him with all of the good receivers that we have now, as well as the pickups at offensive line.
Well, he certainly has an overwhelming amount of talent around him, Ty, and appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing in here. But, you know, as we talked about earlier in the week when we had that discussion that he's alluding to, it's hard to crown this as the best group when we have yet to see any production. So I'm still going with that 2011 group, in my opinion, when you had Nix, Cruz, and Manningham. I'm going to stick by that until I see something out of this group. But you could certainly make the case on paper. It's very appealing. Having Evan Ingram now makes it even more appealing. But, you know, as far as Eli Manning and MVP, if you're the Giants, though, this goes back to Paul, the fact that you still want to have some semblance of a running game. You don't want to go into the season as appealing as this receiving core is and say all Eli's got to do is drop back, throw the football, because that one-dimensional type of offense, it hasn't put them over the top in recent seasons.
Just remember this. The more Eli drops back, the more chances there are that something's going to go wrong, specifically him getting hurt. And at this age, you don't want that to happen. So, yeah, you got to have more balance. There's no question about it. And by the way, about Rudolph, I think he, right now going in, you'd have to strongly consider he's got a real good inside track on at least making the practice squad if he doesn't make the 53. Because he's physical, he does block for the run, he goes over the middle, he's got good hands, he's made big plays in college. He's got a lot of check marks in terms of the boxes. He fills a lot of the boxes for a guy that you certainly would be intrigued about. And he would have to really, in my opinion, he'd have to really wash out during training camp for them not to at least think about him for practice squad as a developmental player. I think he's got too many checks going for him.
Well, the only thing is if other teams are going to take watch and see something that he does.
But then they can steal him.
Yeah, of course, they could grab him. But, I
mean, we have no control over guys who get stolen.
He's going to have to show consistency from training camp into the preseason games. That's number one. He's also going to have to show what he could do on special teams. It goes without saying. Remember, Roger Lewis, what made Roger Lewis stick out, Paul, was he was getting it done every single preseason game. After every game, you'd say, oh, Roger Lewis made this play. Roger Lewis made this touchdown.
In practice, too.
But that's the point. The point is it carried over from practice.
No doubt.
We've seen players, they flash in practice, and then when you get to games, when the coaches want to see, okay, can you separate? Can you make those plays that you did down the field in practice? That's when it separates the men from the boys. So Lewis was doing it on both ends. if Rudolph could do it on both ends, you know, that's when I think that gives the coaching staff an opportunity to say, oh, maybe he's pushing for maybe that sixth spot. But until we see that, it's all speculation at this point. Let's head. You got a comment real quick?
No, I was simply going to say the one thing that I think Rudolph has going for him that we've seen when he was at Florida State is that he is tough. He does get his nose dirty. He does mix it up. He does play very physical. He's not a prima donna or a diva wide receiver. This guy gets into it. And I think that bodes well if you're going to play special teams. You have to have that nose to the grindstone mentality. You got to be willing to get your hands dirty, be a lunch pail guy. Yeah. If you don't have that, playing special teams is going to be a big effort for you.
It's the small things on special teams that pay off. So if you don't like physicality, it's going to be a rough go with trying to make some indentation on that end. Chris is in New Jersey. Chris, what's happening?
Yes, good afternoon, gentlemen.
How we doing, Chris?
Great, yourself?
Doing all right. So what do you got for us?
All right, a couple of things. Latino, you are the man, first of all. I have a question for you.
Okay, thank you.
Got a new member of the fan club.
There was a recent article on ESPN that Eli Manning was the third best quarterback from the 2004 draft, okay? Meanwhile, his numbers are far better than Big Ben and Rivers. Okay, so it's highly questionable as to why he is the third best quarterback. Meanwhile, he is like an Iron Man. Okay.
Well, before you go any further, please let me excuse myself here. Don't even put Rivers in the conversation, okay? He's not involved. Ben and Eli, to me, are the same. That's six of one, half a dozen of the other.
I agree.
They're on an equal playing field, and for somebody who gets allergic to turnovers, they're going to look at Eli's interceptions, and they're going to say, you know what, I'm going to drop him a shade under Ben. And I can accept that. I can agree to disagree. But Philip Rivers, you're in the other room. You're not even in this room. So don't even talk about Philip Rivers. He's not there.
I totally agree. But the thing is, why is he the third best? Meanwhile, he has two championships, two Super Bowl rings.
Well, okay? I mean, I think part of it is also people are looking at the regular season numbers, too. I mean, I would agree. I think Ben and Eli, when you also take into consideration the postseason numbers, I think they're neck and neck. But, I mean, I'm bringing up the numbers of all three quarterbacks. And, you know, you mentioned off the top, Chris, that, you know, Eli's numbers are that much better. If you look at the touchdown-to-interception ratio, you know, Roethlisberger and Phillip Rivers have way more or less interceptions than Eli Manning. If you're just going to do the comparison from the numbers standpoint, and the touchdowns are pretty much all in the same ballpark. So there's not a huge disparity in terms of the numbers.
But here's my thing, though, and the reason why I say this, why I think that Eli Manning has to be, first of all, he has way better numbers than Dan Fouts. Dan Fouts, his career.
Oh, how's Dan Fouts get involved in this conversation?
We're going from
why,
the.
I'll tell you why. Why is he in the Hall of Fame? Meanwhile,
Eli's going to the Hall of Fame.
Way better numbers.
Yeah, but Eli's going to Canton, too. All of these skeptics and naysayers who say he's not going to go, they're out of their minds. Eli Manning's a Hall of Famer.
Exactly, Paul. I totally agree. So why is it that people keep talking about him not being...
Look, these are the same people who kept Harry Carson out for years, too.
Yeah.
Okay? Which to me... Harry Carson was beyond what Gil Hodges is as the poster boy for Hall of Famers in baseball who haven't gotten in. Harry Carson not getting in the Hall of Fame for years and years was the biggest travesty that Canton Shrine had ever committed.
Totally agree with you.
Writers' vote, not the Shrine, the writers' vote. But he finally got in, so it's done. At least that wrong was righted. Eli's going in. Don't worry about it. He's going in.
Thank you. But why is there so many naysayers saying that, you know what, he's borderline. Like, he may not even get in. I don't understand that.
Anybody who says that does not understand the game. Okay?
Thank you.
You remember there was a clovier here in New York and New Jersey, and the guy's catch line at the end of the TV commercial was, an educated consumer is our best customer.
Yes.
Well, that's because the guy who understands and knows, that's the guy you want to impress, because they're the people who get it. They're the people whose respect and understanding and opinion matters. There's value there. The clown who doesn't know, who cares what he thinks?
Right. Exactly. I got one more thing to say, gentlemen. And that is, Paul, you mentioned something about the Cowboys' defense, okay? They got so many rookies. They got so many young players. They let go of so many veterans, okay? And it's still picking the Cowboys to be on top, which is fine. I'd rather my Giants be the underdog, okay? But guess what? Now we bring in the big dogs, okay? We're bringing in ODB.
Well, he was here already.
We're bringing in. You know, my man Marshall, Shepard. Now we got the rookie, and you know, I'm telling you, we're gonna cream these guys completely, and it's still taking the Cowboys to like be the cream of the crop. But they don't understand what's going on. These guys are young bucks from the Cowboys' defense, the secondary.
Look.
We are going to annihilate these guys.
This is all you have to do. This is all you have to do, okay? This has nothing to do with Giants and Cowboys. This has to do with if you look at the track record of National Football League teams, okay, defenses that have been overhauled to the degree that the Cowboys' defense is being overhauled, that has as many young guys in that lineup that they are going to count on for significant reps, don't have a prayer of coming together until at least sometime in October. The first month of the season, in September, there are going to be so many points scored against that Dallas defense as they are running around like a chicken without a head on. Nothing could be better than for an NFC Eastern divisional opponent to be playing Dallas in September when that defense is clueless.
Can I mention one thing? That is
such an advantage. It's almost like playing 11 against 10, okay? And that's a fact. That has nothing to do with these teams in particular. It has to do with the nature of the game. You can't overhaul your defense in one season and expect those guys to hit the ground running in week one. If the Giants don't crush the Cowboys in the opener, I'd be shocked.
Well, here's one thing, though.
Can I say something, though? Paul, can I say something?
Real quick, Chris.
All right, real quick. It took 1 year for Landon Collins to get adjusted to this league, to playing in the secondary.
Sure.
So, well, guess what? You have like three or four secondary plays in the Cowboys defense that they need to get adjusted to.
Well, Chris, here's one thing that I'm going to counter in fairness if we're going to stick to the facts here. The Cowboys, they're four projected starters as of right now, and I'm not saying that this is going to stick. It's possible it changes, but all four starters in the secondary are going to be veterans as of right now. Jeff Heath and Byron Jones are both veteran safeties who have a minimum of at least 3 years in the league.
Jones is a real good player.
And then Orlando Scandrick and Nolan Carroll are their projected starting corners. So if we're going to be fair here with the facts, all four of those guys are veterans. Jordan Lewis, who they drafted, is a rookie, and then we're talking about Xavier Woods is a young safety, and I think both of those guys are going to get reps, as well as Awuzie, who's another corner. But, I mean, the four starters, they are projected, the guys that are going to get the main reps to be veterans. So, I mean, that's the way that I'm looking at it on paper. Once again, these rookies could eat their way into the starting lineup, but as of right now, they are projected to put some veterans out there. And here's another thing that I just want to throw out. And once again, I'm just trying to have a balanced conversation here. If you're going to make the argument that there's rookies for some of these NFC East teams out there, and then you throw out, well, Evan Engram and Sterling Shepard, I mean, those are two young, unproven guys as well, in fairness.
Sterling Shepard is quite proven. He was on the all-rookie team.
No, but the point is though, if you're going to bring in young guys on one end and then say, well, there's young guys on the other end who are inexperienced, they sort of counter each
much
other out.
Much easier to be inexperienced and succeed on offense than it is on defense.
And that's fair. I'm not going to disagree, but you can't assume that a rookie's not going to have some transitional phase on offense as well. That's all I'm throwing
out.
You're absolutely right.
Yeah. Guess who's quarterbacking? Eli Manning. All right.
Well, of course, that certainly helps, no doubt.
So then who's getting, well, there you go. So guess what?
Let me put it to you this way. The Cowboys have four brand new rookies right now who are on the second string depth chart.
Yeah, they're all the backups.
So guess what? Anytime they're in nickel and dime, ring up the pinball machine.
Yeah,
it's going to be a lot of fun.
Because Jordan Lewis is probably going to be their nickel guy, though Scandrick has been used as their nickel guy too. So it'd be interesting to see how they line those guys up.
But can you guys at least agree with me that it takes a while before a secondary could gel?
Oh, there's no question.
Yeah, no, I agree with you 100%. Yeah.
Thank you. And then we have seasoned veterans on our squad, on our team, that's going to, like, penetrate and do whatever the hell they can.
Let's be honest here. Nolan Carroll, the former Eagle, I don't care if he's playing
he's
in
not,
this league
not,
20 years. This
he's
is a guy that you can pick on all day and tomorrow, too, if you like. I mean, come
Thank
on.
You.
All right, Chris.
This Dallas defense is, oh, man.
Chris, appreciate the phone call. Thanks so much for weighing
Thank
in.
You.
Want to try to squeeze in some more phone calls here, and we're also going to get to some of those NFC East running back depth charts. We got Dre in Atlanta. Dre, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, Lance? Hey, Pete, how's it going?
Doing well, Dre. What do you got for us?
Well, you know, I've been sitting down here thinking about it, thinking about my playing days and looking at last year's games. One of the biggest things we haven't talked about is also the play calling. It was an issue after the season, and, you know, this is McAdoo's sophomore season and possibility that he's going to continue to handle the play calling. I think one thing that would definitely help the offensive line get into a rhythm is some sound play calling. Now, there's been times last season where Giants are moving the ball. You know, they have one good play. Say, Richard Jennings got seven yards on that one play, and then another play will come in and be totally off. Like, why are we running this play and we just had 7 yards on this one? Where we could have done ran a different scheme. Also, was looking at the different route combinations. One of the things that was so predictable was that everyone in their position had the same route combinations. I want to see what Sterling Shepard looks like on the outside and with Odell in the slot. Just change it up and run different route combinations. What do you think?
Well, I'm going to go back to something Lance said before. I mean, the fact is the Giants' passing game, because it was Odell, 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 and more Odell, it became a lot easier to defend. I mean, that's just the way it was, especially when you consider that Eli was trying to get rid of the ball so quick. You know, in theory, now with Marshall on the outside, who's got more big play capabilities at this point in his career than Victor Cruz does, you're talking about the extra year with Shepard. You're talking about now Ingram, who we think is going to be a zone breaker. You know, I think your complaint about the Giants' passing game being rather stagnant or predictable is probably going to be alleviated. At least that's the plan.
Right. That's the plan. I was referring to the reference to the rhythm of the play calling and the different route combinations, because in between 2015 and 2016, I looked at the different
Well, let me ask you this. The previous 2 years up until last season were two of Eli's best years of his career. And McAdoo was the offensive coordinator, and Eli was simply sensational. I mean, and nobody was complaining then, and McAdoo was calling the plays.
Well, I also looked at some of the routes that Odell ran in those early years of when he was an offensive coordinator, and I didn't see any of those route combinations last year. That's what I was referring to. I understand that the quality of wide receiver was pretty much different, but we had Reuben Randle, you know, and then I think if you move it, I think since we have the personnel, we could move them around more, and I think with the running game, I think a rhythm. Once we get into a rhythm, because McAdoo has to get in a rhythm also with play calling, but the offensive line and everybody else on that field will have to execute what he calls out.
I think what you have to understand is that the personnel and the abilities of the personnel that the Giants had last year in conjunction with the line and the ball having to get out quick and the lack of a running game and everything in this game is a spider web. Please understand that. It all has a domino effect. It's all woven together. There is no simple answer. So what you're saying is, I understand your complaint, but you're trying to pick out one thread of that spider web, and you can't because it's all intertwined. And so
well, I was looking at it as
you
a
can't.
Domino.
You just, but you can't.
You're right.
But
you're right. But
so that's why. But that's why what I'm saying to you is they've addressed some of these other things, which is supposed to make the spider web stronger, and that's the only answer I can give you.
Well, Andre, I think we've seen perhaps maybe not as much as you're pointing out, but I mean I think that Beckham, they've used him in creative ways, and he's added to his arsenal of route running. For example, I mean the game that jumps out to me is when they played the Bengals on Monday night. this past season. Remember that touchdown that he got when he basically turned Adam Jones around in circles? I mean, that was something new that we haven't really seen in terms of the type of route that he was running. I'm not just talking about the double clutch move that he did to get in the end zone. I'm even talking about where he started at the line of scrimmage and the way he ran his route up towards the end zone. So, you know, they have utilized a few things that they've thrown out in practice and implemented into games. It just may not happen every single contest.
I understand that. But like I was saying, in reference to that web, what I was referring to is that everyone has to do their job, but I think that a rhythm has to be formed. And usually it comes with the play call. I think with the packages, if you have a good play call, I think the check down packages should be, you know, just as intrinsic and unique as the original play call. But thanks for taking my call.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
Thanks for the call.
You know, it does bear mentioning here, again, how creative can you get with all of your deployments when you don't have full-service tight ends who are very adept at blocking? Because now it's a pretty much given. If they're out on the field, the defense pretty much knows what they're going to have to do because there's only certain things that they can run effectively. And again, you know, that's what the Giants have tried to address by bringing in guys like Ingram and hopefully Ellison. I mean, that's two tight ends now they brought in who they think will upgrade the position to where now you won't know. Oh, guess what? Will Ty or Larry Donnell in the game. We know they're going out to pass because chances are very slim they're going to try to block.
Well, and that goes back to your point about the more versatility you have on the field, the more you're keeping the defense on its toes. I mean, even this, once you lost Shane Vereen, I mean, there's always a guessing game when Vereen's
absolutely
on the field. Paul, let's not forget about that.
Absolutely. That's a great point.
Is Vereen going to run? Is Vereen going to serve as a wide receiver? So you keep them guessing, whereas, you know, with Paul Perkins, they did use him a little on screen plays, but for the most part, Perkins was a runner. So even when you have guys in the backfield who are running backs mainly, when they serve the threat as receivers, it also presents, I think, more versatility in the offense. Let's head back to the lines. Len is in Maryland. Len, what's happening?
Hey, how you doing, guys?
What's up, Len?
Listen, with regard to OTAs, a couple of things. I'm kind of anxious to get a feel for what the timetable is with Darian Thompson. He was such a good player last preseason, actually through the OTAs preseason, and then those first two games of the season and getting hurt. So I'm anxious to find out what the timetable is. I'd love to see him be able to get back on the field for game one.
Did you log on the website, Len?
I'm sorry?
Did you log on the website? Dan Salamone just posted an article yesterday. He talked to Darian Thompson the other day.
Great.
Just posted the article.
I'll check that out. Thank you. Thanks for that lead, Paul.
Yeah, and he says...
I'm also anxious, to see what we really got in Mikhail Thompson. You know, it's now or never. I want to see if Jarrell Adams can just take a step forward for us. And I want to be able to designate Goodson as my thumper on defense, Paul. And so I'm anxious to see what we really got in Goodson at, you know, in that line.
So are the coaches.
I think he's a downhill player, and I think he can I think he can create some chaos on defense.
That's the hope, certainly in first and second down. And if not, Keenan Robinson may have to be pushed into some more snap duty. Interesting, you mentioned Mikhail Thompson, and we often forget about him, but this is a guy who's got length. He's got speed. They certainly used him in a lot of different formations during the course of training camp last year, including covering the slot.
Yeah, corner and safety.
I mean, he's got length and speed, and those two things are really, really good to have if you're a defensive back. So, you're right. We probably should keep a little bit of an eye on him because it's easy to forget a guy who's been injured for two straight seasons.
Yeah. And I think he's, I think this is it. I mean, I think it's now or never.
Well, I don't think there's any. Well, same thing with Matt Lacoste.
Show us what he's got.
Matt
Lacoste.
Not Burhe?
Yeah. Burhe is another one who's been banged up. I mean,
get it done now.
Even go back to, you know, he's not on the roster anymore. Cooper Taylor, we were having these discussions about too. I mean, he also had trouble staying healthy. A lot of these guys are in the same boat. Yeah.
Lance, I'm going to give some credit to Paul here. I want to give him credit for during this offseason for creating the need for a brand new position on the football team. And that's the position of thumper. Thumper is now a specialist. But what we need to have a thumper on the team, Paul, we need 50-man game day rosters. It just doesn't fit. I, 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 I mean, you can't have a guy like Blunt. If you sign Blunt, who doesn't make this team, Paul? I mean, where does a guy like Blunt fit?
Well, first of all, you realize he's on
like
Philly,
Blunt,
right?
I'm not picking.
Yeah, I think he was talking about – you're talking about Len hypothetically if he was still on the market.
Yeah.
Yeah,
right.
That's what he's talking about.
Well,
yeah.
Then you know who your top backs are, right? You know that Perkins is here. You know
right.
that Gallman is obviously going to stick. And you know that Vereen
right.
is going to stick.
Absolutely.
Okay, you know that for sure. So now
right.
you got to figure out, okay, who's going to be that four? Is it okay. going to be Darkwa? Is it going to be Drone? Is it would it be Blunt?
Okay.
Chances
right, well,
are, if
me,
Blunt had signed, he probably would be the four. They'd both be four guys.
But let me ask you a question. I think we know Gallman's not going to start, but we know what his role is. Okay, he's going to get some plays. He's going to get some snaps. We're going to work him in. But he's really our insurance policy if Perkins goes down. Right now, who's the insurance policy for Vereen? If Vereen goes down,
right now it's
Len.
Drone.
It can't be Blunt.
No, it's Drone. Len, it's Drone.
Right now it's Drone.
Of course
is a receiver.
It is. That's what I'm saying.
Yeah, he's
I mean, why did we keep Bobby Rainey last year? Bobby Rainey was the fourth running back.
Right.
We kept Bobby Rainey in case something happened to Vereen, and it did, and we put him on the field. I'm not bragging about what his performance was, but I'm just saying there was a fit. For Rainey, you need somebody who can substitute Vereen
if something
happens to Vereen.
I would submit to you that Perkins or Gallman could do that.
And I never could understand why we stop at 46 anyway.
No,
I mean,
but Perkins or Gallman could wind up taking Vereen's role if Vereen gets hurt again. You know, here you are worried about a backup for Vereen when I'm telling you a thumper becomes a critical part of your starting lineup because he's in that rotation in very serious situations. You can't compare those two needs at all. They're not even close.
But even for those last seven plays that you talked about earlier in the show, and you made a great case, Paul. I mean, no question about it. I mean, you're really talking about a guy at the end of the game day roster. And almost what you need is to be able to cover all your, you got to cover all your circumstances.
Here's what I will say, Len.
It's almost like that guy is 47, 48, or 49 on your game day.
Here's what I will say.
Which today doesn't exist.
Here's what I will say. All right. Here's what I will say. And I'm going to give you a little bit of leeway to you on this one. It has been expressed to me that an NFL team in today's game, because of the versatility and because of the numbers issues, it's almost assuredly that if you do carry a thumper, he's going to have to be able to play special teams, like Brandon Jacobs did, by the way.
Yeah,
when he was
point.
Here with the Giants, Jacobs played specials.
So
that alleviates your issue about worrying about the how many guys you're going to give a jersey to on Sunday. If that thumper is able to play specials, now you really can carry him without worrying about it. Now, the issue is, would LeGarrette Blunt be willing to play specials? I think the role he's got with the Eagles, and obviously, and I said this and I put it up on Twitter the second he signed, before they cut Ryan Matthews, I said I would make him their featured back. He would get the ball over Matthews any day of the week. I think what happened is that Blunt saw the opportunity to be the number one back in Philadelphia, saw the money that was supposedly a million up to 2.8 with incentives.
It's much more
and
appealing.
Said, why should I take a thumper role with the Giants when I could be the star with the Eagles?
Well, Len, we got a few more phone calls, so if we could just hold that thought.
I'll get it next week. Have a good weekend, guys.
You got it, Len. Appreciate the phone call. No doubt, Paul. I mean, I agree with you. You have to look at it through the lens of Blunt. He's got that offer. He sees the fact that, and there's speculation that Ryan Matthews may be cut now, the fact that they signed LeGarrette Blunt.
I believe he is already.
I don't know. Have they made that official? I don't think they made that official. I could be wrong.
Let me check.
That's at least the plan, and that LeGarrette Blunt would step into probably more of a feature back role, and then you have Darren Sproles and Pumphrey, who they just drafted as more of the complementary backs. And the Giants weren't going to sacrifice a Paul Perkins and some of the other backs from their development just to bring in LeGarrette Blunt for some goal line and short yardage work. All right, let's head back to the lines. We got Jaleel in Virginia. Jaleel, what's happening?
Hey, what's going on, guys? Finally, I can reach you all on the line, man. I appreciate it.
No problem. Sure. We appreciate you making the call. So what do you have for us?
Well, I always look at you guys and stuff. This is definitely my biggest pet peeve as far as watching you all amping up before the season and all that, man. I just want to talk about, like, the draft. I was happy about it. I was skeptical about David Webb, the third rounder, a little bit about the fourth rounder with Gallman, who ran a 4.6 in a 40 and all that stuff. But I think he probably will progress because, remember, Odell didn't have that much good of a combine. He only had 7 reps as far as bench pressing and all that stuff. And he ended up coming up good. You know, first time he ran like a 4.43. Second time, I think he ran a 4.33 and stuff. But the fact of the matter, let's get into the point. I am happy that with the addition of Engram and Marshall, I don't think teams can just go out there and just be like, let's play cover two. Because when you play cover two, you are daring another team to beat you with a running game and a tight end. How y'all feel about that?
Well, it's what we talked about earlier in the program, Julio. We were saying how Engram in the middle of the field, Marshall drawing attention, should back the safeties away and then essentially give the Giants more running lanes. I mean, that, I think, on paper is the ultimate goal. Does that translate to the football field? We're going to have to wait and see, but I would agree with you. That's the whole point, to bring in more versatility into the offense, to now tell the defense that you can't get too comfortable near the box and you can't just worry about Odell Beckham. You have more guys that you need to be concerned about, and I think the Giants have presented more weapons for Eli Manning. Now it's a matter of the paper translating to production on the field. That's what it comes down to.
Yeah, and with me, okay, like tight ends on the roster. I look at the roster and, you know, usually we try to go with the three set, like three tight ends, you know, like when it had like Darnell, Adrian Robinson, and like Wilton and stuff. Now we got Engram, we got Wilton, he's still there, we got Rhett Ellison. And we got...
We got Matt Lacoste is another
Hurlitt.
One.
He transformed into a tight end. And I want to know, like, where do these guys fit on the roster? Like, with Rhett Ellison title, would it be a fullback or a starting tight end? Because I see Engram starting. I see that kid got discipline. He knows the game of football. He loves the game of football. And I really think that he could have been great. And to be honest with y'all, me down here in Virginia, I personally know Bucky Hodges, and I thought we was going to pick him in the first round, Njoku. But I like this pick. I really like this pick. He's like a Jordan Reed. He's fast. He can create a lot of mismatches. Like, as far as, like, once we play Dallas, say we play in Dallas, you can't put Sean Lee on that guy in man coverage. You got to put somebody like Byron Jones. You bring the safety up to step up to create mismatches down the field and, you know, stuff like that.
And that gets back
to Marshall.
I really like that. That gets back to, you know, what we were talking about earlier, and appreciate the phone call, that you're going to now force the safeties to have to think a little bit more or come back down to the line of scrimmage to pick up a tight end like Engram. As far as where Ellison counts against the roster, it really doesn't matter. He's still going to count against the 53, whether you list him as a fullback or a tight end.
Right.
So I wouldn't get too caught up with that. The second point about Mark Herzlick, you know, Ben McAdoo was asked about this a week ago when he spoke to the media, and Herzlick changed his number because he wants to show more versatility and have more ways to make the roster. But, you know, McAdoo's answer was, Herzlick has served as a tight end on the scout team for the last few seasons. So they've utilized him that way in practice. Now he just wants to give himself the opportunity to maybe showcase that in games, but I don't think that it's presenting an opportunity for him to consistently line up as a tight end. As McAdoo said, the number change really doesn't do anything for how they're looking at the roster. It's simply to give him an opportunity in a game in the preseason if they wanted to toy with lining him up. But I don't think this really changes their outlook of how they're going to utilize Mark Herzlick, Paul.
I agree.
Let's head back to the lines. We've got Leo in New Milford. Leo, what's happening?
How you doing today on this nice little warm day?
Very well.
A couple of things. Paul, you really hit on a point talking about Jim Finn, a local Jersey kid that was quite an athlete, became Mr. Irrelevant when he went to the University
of
Penn.
But an overachiever, I might add, in the NFL. He really worked his butt off to become something.
Oh, he really did. I believe he was also a state champ wrestler,
as I
recall, out of Bergen Catholic, that before he went to the University of Penn. But looking at a number of these things, we have so many potential possibilities. But I remember going to clinic years ago. Tom Osborne was a speaker, and he spoke about aggressive running and how you utilize different positions, footwork, hip, power, shoulder, everything. And he went through each of the little – he broke it down into tiny steps, and it was so incredible. So sometimes you get what you call a big thumper. You know, this guy's 6'1 or 6'2, 250 pounds, that can't get through the hole because they don't get that pad level. And actually, Brandon Jacobs, when he first came into the NFL, kept his pad level pretty high in the beginning. As you saw him develop and grow and become really much more of a drive back, you saw his pad level start to drop when he went between the tackles.
A little bit. He's a big guy. I mean, he's about 6'4".
And there's all kinds of things that the coaches can see and utilize that foot position. I look at a guy like, what's his name, Brett Jones, a guy that came out of Canada.
Yeah.
Brett Jones, yeah. I look at him like a almost an overgrown fullback that you'd probably throw him and run a cow off and throw him in the backfield, let him come up and hit people, because it's a different kind of block for a lot of these guys that come over from tight end and move to an H-back in coming up, as opposed to the kind of blocking that they're doing at the line of scrimmage, or maybe they're out in the field and stalk blocking or doing a number of things, total foot position, keeping your butt back, having your hips down and shouldered. So, you know, those are things to consider. Now, Shane Smith is such an unknown, but I'm excited to hear what happens with him.
Yeah, we'll keep an eye on
him. Unknowns.
You know, you have to also consider Jarrell Adams, because we don't know what kind of steps he's going to take in his second year. He's a pretty big guy. You know,
maybe he turns into being
a really good blocker. We don't know that.
Yeah, a lot of potential people that can make a turn. And I think what the real considerations are, and I'm real interested to see in some of the OTAs, is some of the chemistry that comes through. We've got, you know, a great receiving corp right now. Great's an unknown, to be honest with you, because we really don't know how they're going to meld together. Everyone says, hey, when Eli misses, he throws high. So now we've got big receivers that are coming back to some of the old positions and where we are, and we'll see what occurs. But these guys have to work together. It's not as simple as just throw them on the field and you've got a great receiving corps. So we got a lot of work ahead of us, and hopefully we can depend on these coaches. And the last thing I wanted to touch on was the consistency, having the same coaching staff, meaning the line coach, year after year, to work with the same people that grow with that chemistry, to work together with the various stunts, twists, adjustments that the defense comes up with. So,
Mike Solari, who you're referring to, I mean, think about when the Giants had one of their great offensive lines, you know, going back to 07, 08, they had Pat Flaherty, and he was here for, you know, well over a decade with Tom Coughlin.
Exactly.
So I agree with you. I mean, the coaching staff overall has stayed together. So I think that's positive, not just for the offensive line, Leo. I think it's good for the entire team that the coaching staff is going to continue to evaluate the same guys.
Oh, absolutely. I totally agree. I just picked the offensive line because that's such a sore point right now. I mean, we're probably at the end of the day, mainline Charlie can't jump on. But, I mean, you just look at at that point, an offensive line. Consistency is so important, and it is for each step. And having a consistent word come down from the coaching staff is critical.
Absolutely. And appreciate the phone call, Leo. Thanks so much
for weighing in.
You got it. And that is, I think, a very good point that people overlook, the fact that the coaching staff is together. Before we wrap up, I know we were teasing real quickly about the NFC East running backs, and we did throw out a lot of the names, but on the theme of thumper, just to look at what the division is looking like, we threw out LeGarrette Blount, so the Eagles are probably going to use him as their main guy in short yardage goal line. The Redskins, I would imagine, are going to rely on Samaje Perine, who they just brought in via the draft, and the Cowboys obviously have Ezekiel Elliott. So those three other teams have that power, bigger type of back who they're probably going to utilize, and it'll be interesting to see, you know, who takes that role on for the Giants. There's plenty of guys in the backfield, but I think the roles are a little bit undetermined at this point.
Right now, it looks like they're going to have to accomplish the same thing in different ways, because the other three teams can just give the ball to a thumper, and that's just the way it is.
Monday's edition of Big Blue Kickoff Live is going to start at a special time. We will be up and running at 11 a.m. Eastern on Monday to accommodate the schedule for Monday in terms of practice. So set the clocks and make sure you're ready to go an hour early on Monday. Paul and I will take you through some of the big storylines to watch as OTAs get underway. So we look forward to that as Big Blue Kickoff Live with you each and every weekday here on Giants.com. For Paul Dottino, I'm Lance Meadow. Enjoy the weekend. We'll speak to you on Monday. Have a good one.